98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Weekly Blast.
If our luck is truly changing as a basketball town, maybe it will come in the form of a Clippers-Lakers series in the first round of the playoffs. Get one of them eliminated right out of the gate. That would be fortuitous. But given our history as a sports town, I've got a new fear after watching these last two games. The conventional belief is that these games will sharpen the Suns, give them precious experience in the arena of big game basketball. And all of that is certainly true. But my new fear is this stretch run of high intensity stuff might wear down some of the Western Conference contenders, especially a team like the Suns that doesn't have the front court depth others enjoy. And then on cue, the Lakers get healthy and roll into the playoffs with a team that has absorbed a lot of losses, but not a lot of physical attrition. Once again, we're all rediscovering the joys and perils that come with cheering for a really good team when you start fretting over the small details. But it's also becoming clear to me, now more than ever, that the Suns have enough talent, but they'll need a shot of good luck as well. The stuff that has always eluded this franchise in the past, starting with a coin flip at the very beginning over 50 years ago. All right, today's Bickley Blast brought to you by my great friends at Chapman BMW. You can test drive the ultimate driving machine at the newly renovated Chapman BMW in Chandler, at Chapman BMW on Camelback. You can find them online at chapmanbmw.com.
Well, if we heard it once, we heard it 20 times last night. I'd sign up to see these two teams play in the second round. Well, sure, if you don't have a rooting interest, you'd sign up for that.
Yeah. Well said.
Suns fans right now might not feel great about that. And I think Suns fans are a confident bunch right now.
Mm-hmm.
But they lost twice to this Clippers team. The only other team that's beat the Suns twice this year is the Denver Nuggets. And that was those back-to-back nights where, especially on one, the Jamal Murray two that was ruled a three, they got hosed in that game. The Clippers have kind of handled the Suns quite nicely. The game in Phoenix early in the season, they were up by as many as 30 points in that game. The Suns, to their credit, battled back and lost by five. Last night, that game was nip and tuck, and I do think there's an element, and I'm not making excuses here, I truly believe this. I think the Suns did run out of gas a little bit in the fourth quarter of that game. You can question some of the strategic decisions they made, like DeAndre Ayton carrying them in the third quarter and not touching the ball again in the fourth, but whatever. I think fatigue was a factor, but if the playoffs were starting today and that was the second round of the playoffs were starting today and the Suns were facing the Clippers,
there's not
a lot of reason to feel great about the Suns' chances the way they've played against
them. I really like the way you said it earlier. When you posed the question, do the Suns have a Clippers problem? And that's that resonates because the NBA, the annals in the NBA are full of things like this. Teams that have a certain nemesis, a team that is kind of built to defeat them, and it would be best to avoid them is the best way to deal with that kind of issue. I was wondering the same thing last night because for whatever reason, part of the reason I find the Clippers to be goofy is Paul George. His performances can be erratic. He has got a very recent history of coming up very lame in big game situations, or at least big moments in big games. And so I've begun to wonder exactly how great that guy is. Against the Phoenix Suns, there's no debate. He brings it.
Well, if you think the Clippers shot the ball well against the Suns last night from three-point range, in the first game they went 17 of 29, 59%. George, by the way, went 7 of 10 in that game, too. He had 39 points. So, yeah, you're right. Paul George likes when he sees purple and orange and white. Well, they were wearing white last night. But he for whatever reason, he feasts on that matchup right now. And I agree with you. That will be when you raise the burning questions about each team in the Western Conference playoff pecking order, the question about the Clippers will be, can Paul George figure out how to be a consistent playoff performer for the Clippers? I picked them to win the title last year. Paul George's performance slash failure in the postseason was a big reason why they weren't even there.
Yep.
So that's going to be a question. Just like on the Suns side, people will talk about Chris Paul and his playoff history being a cause for concern. How, for a great player, how come he hasn't been able to ascend over those issues. Paul George's, I think, are much more recent, because that's coming from last season on a team that had big time championship expectations.
Yeah, listen, the thing about Devin Booker that I'm going to be very curious about is there are players that need to do it a couple of times before they get comfortable in playoff basketball. LeBron even had a spotty playoff history early on in mm-hmm. his career. Paul George certainly has been dealing with that. And so you wonder, will Devin Booker have the same kind of deal this year? Does he have to go through it to be good at it? Or has he waited long enough to get to the playoffs that he's got enough requisite experience to go into his first playoffs and dominate? Those are going to be key questions to me. And I'm confident in Devin Booker. I think Devin Booker is the kind of player that always finds out a way to do it. One of the things about Devin Booker as a sidelight that I've kind of like is there have been some games now in the fourth quarters where he hasn't been elite, where he's had trouble scoring down the stretch. It never gets in his head.
True.
And that's not easy, because players can become and lack confidence. It's like Devin Booker knows he has to get through this issue to be who he wants to be as a player. So he's just absorbing the nights it doesn't happen to him, because he knows he's going to will himself to get where he needs to be. So I think that's going to be bear watching in the postseason. And it's going to be a matter of, you know, like I said, the luck issue is going to be paramount, because if for whatever reason the Suns get a ridiculously hard first round matchup and lose, it's going to feel like, yep, just our luck. That figures. That's our destiny as a basketball franchise. I hope that's not the case, because as we played earlier, and I wouldn't mind hearing it again, Bill Simmons talking about this basketball team, he's got full confidence that the Suns have enough pieces to get into the NBA Finals. And that's not nothing. That's something.
Yeah, here was that cut from the Bill Simmons podcast.
They have an identity. They play with pace. They're efficient. They know who they are. They have two guys who can create really, really, really good shots when it matters, in Paul and Booker. And they have interchangeable wings, pretty flexible team. Ayton allows them to basically play a bunch of smaller guys around them. And you look at the stats, they're averaging almost 115 points a game. Their shooting percentages were 49, 38, 83, which is really good. Seventh in offense, but 25th in pace. They're playing about as slow as any contending team, but they're getting all the shots they want. And they're getting them a high level of efficiency. And they're also the third best free throw team in the league. And here's why that's important. If they're up three with 20 seconds left, the game's over. Chris Paul's 93%. Booker's 86. Johnson's 88. Bridges and Crowder are both 82. They're winning a free throw shooting contest. So they got that. And I think they know who their best five are.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that.
Yeah.
The free throw thing, and you can look at Booker's percentage, and yeah, it's really good. There's still too many missed free throws from Devin Booker. He set such a standard last year where anytime he misses now, you're surprised. You're surprised when Chris Paul misses a free throw. Yeah, ultimately, you have to feel confident about that percentage. Mm-hmm. But, all right, going back to that question, do the Suns have a Clippers problem? Chris Paul talked about it last night, about the difficulties the Suns team has faced against LA.
You know, they did a good job of shrinking the court, mucking the game up a little bit. Rondo came in and changed the pace of it. You know, he made shots, found guys or whatnot. So, you know, they beat us tonight. You know, they played well together. And, yeah, we got another game on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good synopsis. They got beat. They got beat by a better team than them on that night. Now, I'm not convinced the Clippers are a better team than the Suns, but in two head-to-head matchups, they've been the better team this year.
Yeah, that's very well said. And so then you say, all right, their two star players, how do Phoenix's two stars rank with their two stars? And you kind of go and drill down from there. I think the addition of Rondo was a key pickup for them, because it gives them something they really, really needed, and that was just a fiery leader at point guard who can kind of keep everything on the rails for them. One of the things that I took away from last night's game is a fear that the Suns bring out the best in the Clippers based on all the trash talking that goes on. And they had obviously a real heated incident, of which you heard every word earlier in the year, between Devin Booker and Paul George, to the point where there was nearly a fight on the court. And so there's a lot of heat between these two teams, but the Suns didn't look uncomfortable in that kind of a game last night. There were times during the 7 seconds or less Phoenix Suns when once the team got to the playoffs, other teams took liberties with them because they thought they were soft, thought they were finesse, thought they didn't want that kind of stuff, dragged them into like a back alley fight. And the Nash Suns weren't as bad as some people feared it at playing half court basketball, but they never won a championship. This team, for what it's worth, has got a couple of guys who are real comfortable in that kind of game. Now, I don't know about everybody else, but Devin Booker and Chris Paul are perfectly fine inside a chippy, dirty, mouthy basketball game.
And they played against a team that's equally as comfortable, if not more so comfortable in those situations. Paul George talked about it last night.
I mean, it's more so we focused on us. I don't know what that chirp is about. We focus on us. I don't care what they're doing over there. I don't care who they are or what they're doing. You know, I'm locked in. They can do the chirping. I let them have it tonight. I just stayed in my zone, stayed in my place. You know, I don't know. I don't know. But, you know, again, I don't care what they're doing. We're focused on us over here. We're focused on getting better. Tonight was a fun matchup. And we appreciate, the challenge.
Here's Ty Lue was asked after the game, the head coach of the Clippers, the physical nature of the game, all the chippiness, did it bother you?
Want to make a name for yourself?
And of course, there's an ad before the video.
Oh, wait a minute. I do want to make a name for myself. I've been wanting to for years.
Hold on. We got to wait. Trying to sell some pizza. I got it.
This is delicious.
I love when you have to watch like a 30-second video for a 20-second soundbite.
It's really special, isn't it?
It really is. That's my bad.
Don't worry about it.
I had that edited.
Relax, it's Friday. It's all good.
Oh, yeah. I keep forgetting it's Friday.
Concerns, if any, do you have with all the extracurricular activities out there tonight?
I don't have any concerns. I love it. You know, you competing at a high level against one of the best teams in the league. Do what you got to do to win. And I thought our guys were physical. I thought we competed. I thought we fought. Just stayed the course, you know. And, it's going to be games like this where it's going to be chippy. You know, they're fighting for something. We're fighting for something. So it's going to happen. And, you know, I'm okay with it.
Last night, impressive performance by the Clippers. That's the way I viewed the game. Last night does nothing to really diminish my overall confidence on the Suns in the postseason. But for those people that do have, and yeah, we brought up some concerns about how they match up with the Clippers. They'll get to see them one more time. But for the people that have those concerns, you want to avoid the Clippers in the second round, there's a solution to it. Get the number one seed.
Well, there you go.
Now, there's no guarantee the Clippers are going to stay in that three spot, but it would increase your chances if you overtake Utah.
Yeah.
And Utah, I got to give credit to them, too. They played in that same knockdown, drag-out overtime game that the Suns did, and they went home last night and beat up on Portland.
Yeah.
Portland's a team I can't figure out.
Well, yeah, me neither. The Nuggets smoked the Clippers. The Blazers are good against some teams. Like I said in the blast, what I'm afraid of is you get a lot of teams like the Nuggets, the Suns, the Jazz, the Clippers, who see that one or two seed and are going for it. And all these teams try to get hot at the same time, and then the Lakers are just mending. Losing, but mending. And then they roll into the playoffs, maybe as a 7 seed, but they get LeBron and Anthony Davis back, and they feel like a 1 seed. And having to start on the road, big deal to LeBron James. That's my worry. Now, let's talk about 3 incidents inside that game last night.
Okay.
In terms of what they mean in all of this. All right. The Devin Booker flagrant foul. To me, it was a clean block with a little body contact, and Devin Booker, the finish of it, it almost looked like he was trying to, I don't know, there was just some weird body action at the very end of it, but he didn't touch him after the block. Flagrant foul?
I think my biggest problem with it, Bick, is the use of the word flagrant. to me, there's nothing like Patrick Beverley's foul, and I'm sure that's one of the incidents you're going to bring up.
Yep.
That to me meets the criteria for a flagrant foul, whether it's a one or a two. And again, I tweeted about it last night. I didn't like that call. You want to call the foul, put him on the line. Let's get the game going. Nobody's tuning in to TNT to watch Mark Davis blow his whistle.
No.
And that's what happened for a good portion of last night's game.
Yes.
And it happens in a lot of games that Mark Davis refs. My problem maybe is with the crafting of the definition of flagrant foul in today's NBA. Okay, fine. Now you want to move on to the Beverley foul?
Patrick Beverley, super dirty elbow thrown.
In a late game situation.
In a late game situation. He gets thrown out of the game after review, and he nearly assaults the ref. I mean, I thought he was going to make contact with that guy. So that in and of itself is kind of indicative of what this team is going to see. That's what playoff basketball looks like.
Well, Chris Paul was asked about Beverly's foul on him that did lead to a flagrant penalty, too, and an ejection for Pat Beverley.
Nothing. I'm worried about me. I was actually trying to I played a game, you know what I mean? Like, I knew that he was about to try to take a foul, so I jumped trying to get a three. Trying to get three free throws, so, I mean, it is what it is.
Don't glaze over that answer from Chris Paul. If Chris Paul is not on the Phoenix Suns and that same thing transpires with the same Phoenix Suns team and it happened to somebody else not named Chris Paul, there might have been a whole different reaction to that. Chris Paul just chalking it up to, I play the game. I knew he was going to foul me, so I'm trying to get the three up.
Yeah.
I freaking love Chris Paul. There's no other way I can say it.
He's so smart.
After a loss on national television where he gets upended on a dirty play, never used it. I didn't think anything of it. You talked about his calming effect in late games. After the game, he's got a calming effect.
Yeah. Yeah, listen.
The dude is amazing.
He really is. He really, really is. People have been trying to get into Chris Paul's kitchen for the longest time. You remember that game when he started Wake Forest and they played Duke and Mike Krzyzewski did one of the weirdest things I've ever seen. He started a walk-on and he had him guard Chris Paul just to thug him up.
Uh-huh.
And it was really unbecoming. A lot of people could not believe Coach K would do that. But that's what Chris Paul does to people. He is so unflappable that people go to great lengths to try to get him off his game. Even he just can't do it.
Another minor example, there was a tight camera shot on Chris Paul. The Suns are inbounding the ball. It was on him and the defender. And I think it was Rondo that was on him. And Rondo was in his face, like face-to-face contact. And that would bother a lot of guys. A lot of guys would look down and say, come on, man, get off me.
Right.
Chris Paul's looking around directing traffic like, I expect this. This is what I do. I expect this to be done to me, too. Calming effect.
Yeah,
I
totally.
Loved it.
Yeah, listen, it's that's why anybody who minimalizes Chris Paul's effect on this basketball team doesn't know basketball.
Then your third incident from last night's game?
The Kawhi Leonard dunk on DeAndre Ayton, which was more of a throw-in dunk.
Yeah, in case you missed it, here was John Bloom's description.
Kawhi Leonard now penetrating, hanging, and trying to jam it, and he does! A big-time flush for Kawhi, the claw, right on top of DA.
Yeah, that was met with the requisite amount of respect and excitement from the visiting broadcaster, I think. Well done, Bloomer, because it wasn't a dunk by Kawhi.
Right.
If as a PA announcer, if that happened against the Suns in their arena, I would just be like, Kawhi Leonard.
Right, exactly. No, Bloomer does a really good job when he's not yelling at me.
I'd say he does a good job when he is yelling at me.
That too. So I looked at this play because some people on Twitter were kind of getting into DA about that, and I cannot applaud DeAndre Ayton more for trying to block that dunk. That's exactly what he needs to do. If you're going to be the team's rim protector, you got to challenge stuff. And for the longest time, DeAndre Ayton would just stay flat-footed, arms down, watch guys rise up around him and score. He didn't do that, and I cannot applaud him enough. So the play that a lot of people were making fun of, I was cheering for DA for trying. So many basketball players would have just gotten the heck out of Dodge when they saw Kawhi coming at him like that.
I agree with you, But I'm glad you brought this up because you gauged a lot. Well, you didn't make up your mind on what you felt about that play based on social media, but you saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you were, oh, come on, DA, that was soft.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was the opposite of soft.
It was the opposite of soft.
It was, I don't care if I end up on a poster.
Exactly.
Or as a non-fungible token.
No!
As an NFT?
I'm going to do what's best for the team.
Mm-hmm.
But this play encapsulates, and that reaction encapsulates pretty much all of my frustration about the perception of DeAndre Ayton. In a lot of ways, this dude is in a no-win situation. You go up to block the shot, and you get faced. Oh, that was soft. Had he got out of the way, because some people would say, oh, that's when you get out of the way.
Oh, yeah.
No, if you get out of the way, that's soft.
Yeah, it is soft. But most players would have gotten out of the way, and I give credit to him because that means he's changing.
I guess the one thing you could say is like he could have just fouled him and prevented him from dunking it.
No, baby steps, man. Baby steps. Kawhi Leonard is monstrous.
That's okay? One.
And he, I haven't seen that kind of burst in him in a long time.
I agree with you. He had like bad intent on that.
Bad
play.
Intent.
I was just going to say the same thing. Like watching Kawhi last night is you forget how dominant he could be when he wants to be, which he doesn't want to be all the time. And, you know, we talk so much about like, you know, this planned days of rest that he takes off and stuff like that and what he did in the bubble. But he's still like, when he gets in the zone, he's still like one of the five best players. And last night, he got in this stretch where he just like took over the game, and he's so smooth and he's so big and strong that he's really tough. That's the thing we worry about the Clippers with, as like kind of screwed up as they might be internally. They still have unbelievable talent with those two stars if they're both on. And they're so hard to guard. I mean, you'd figure if there was ever like a team that was fit to kind of stop those guys, it's the Suns with Jay Crowder and Mikal Bridges, these guys who are wing defenders that are supposed to, and they just got dominated.
Yeah, and we saw earlier in the year, in the first meeting between those two teams, mm-hmm. Paul George was great, Kawhi Leonard was awful,
yeah,
and they still won that game. Now, it was the first, you know, seven games of the season. How much of that do you chalk up to, you know, how much of identity was built for each team? You know, I don't know what you read into it, but when they're both going like they were in the second half last night, man, mm-hmm. that Jarrett's right. That's a tough game.
Yeah, no, it really, really is. There are times when you watch Kawhi Leonard and he's like, it looks like he's exhausted on the court. It looks like he's 45 years old. And that's why that burst last night was like, whoa, that's the old Kawhi Leonard. I don't know what it is with Kawhi. Even when you listen to some of his answers, I read transcripts of his interview last night. It's like he's living in a different planet. I don't know. I mean, a heck of a player.
This is kind of a side, but just when you read people's quotes in your head, do you read them in the voice of the person talking, or do you read just in your own voice? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Do you read it like Kawhi Leonard would be saying it?
I read it in my own voice.
I read it in my own voice, too. Yeah.
See, I always think of it like the person talking, how they would be saying it.
Yeah. Here's vintage Kawhi Leonard.
Yourself? And what would you like people to know about you?
I'm a fun guy. Obviously, I love the game of basketball. I mean, it's just more questions you have to ask me in order for me to tell you about myself. I just can't give you a whole spiel. I don't even know where you're sitting at. Like.
Kawhi Leonard. Oh, thank you, Jared.
That will never not be fantastic.
Kawhi Leonard? Yeah.
No, I was letting you off the hook. I was just talking about the laugh.
Oh, okay.
I could listen to that over and over.
It is funny.
And there's been times where I have listened to it over and over. Starting next Monday, we're giving you the chance all week to win a $500 signing bonus. Text bonus to 620-620. To register, then listen for your name at 735, 135, 335 again starting Monday, and that'll be your chance to win the Arizona Sports Signing Bonus. Once again, that's bonus, B-O-N-U-S, to 620-620. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Jay Feely. That's coming up on Bickley & Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Uh-huh.
Clay Murata on this Friday, live from the Auction Community Studios. I was starting to be convinced, Bick,
about
that Jarrett Carlin and Jay Feely were like true friends. Jay texts Jarrett and says, "Hey, I got a great story about something you guys were talking about."
He's a huge fan of the show. Always listens to the show and always kind of like live tweets me, like texts me during the show. Comments, loves it.
Yeah,
I'd love to come on, tell a great story.
He won't answer Jarrett's call.
No.
Maybe he's goofing on you, Carlin.
Maybe he's a huge golf fan, so I'm sure he's watching the Masters.
Oh, right, I'm now. Sure he is. Probably doesn't want to be disturbed by somebody like you.
By the way, Justin Rose now at the 7-under par.
All right, before we move on, is it true that Doug Franz said this morning he's only been to 2 concerts?
Yes.
2 concerts in his whole entire life.
Yes, and I found out what the second one was. He talked about one concert being Billy Joel.
All right.
Doug and Wolf were having a Billy Joel debate.
Wolf
says,
debate?
Billy Joel is immensely talented, right? He's so boring. His music is boring.
I agree with Wolf.
I disagree with you both.
I know. I know you do.
Look, is it going to get you charged up to be a wedge buster in the NFL, the music? No. But he's a good songwriter.
He's a tremendous songwriter.
So I love Billy Joel.
The other concert Doug had been to is Pink Floyd. Pink Floyd. I mean, I've never been to a Pink Floyd show. Not really my cup of tea. I tip my cap to their legendary status and the prog rock genre.
Uh-huh.
But that's kind of a heavy-duty first concert, is it not?
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. Maybe he walked out of that show thinking, oh, that's what a live concert is?
And he never went
back.
I'm
never going back.
I'm going to be high for a year.
Is it like a sad thing that... I've been to lots of concerts, mm-hmm. but 2 of the concerts I have been to are Billy Joel and Roger Waters from Pink Floyd.
Really?
Wow.
I have the same musical taste as Doug Franz.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, no.
Oh, my goodness. All right. So if Jay Feely doesn't call in, all right, let's expand really quickly our Pecos League discussion from earlier. If you are just joining us, this is absolutely wild. So your mean Mercedes, the... not so young prospect for the White Sox.
He's only like 28, I think.
28.
Yeah.
He has spent a decade in the minor leagues. He is 15 for 27 in his first crack at really being a major leaguer. Began this year with 8 consecutive hits. He's hitting bombs, doubles. He's just been a terror, right? And so I did a little research on this guy in the Pecos League.
Never heard of it before today.
It's an independent baseball league that operates in desert mountain regions throughout California, New Mexico, southern Arizona, Kansas, West Texas, and southern Colorado. All right. They play in cities that do not have major or minor league affiliates, and it's the wild, wild west of baseball leagues.
Yes.
Okay, so we had a listener of our program, a gentleman who follows us on social media, who played with your mean Mercedes in the Pecos
League. For the White Sands Pupfish of the Pecos League in 2014, they were based in Alamogordo, New Mexico, according to the Baseball Cube. So Craig tweets us, and because we started doing I just looked at it. I had no idea about the Pecos League. You mentioned it, and I looked up his mm-hmm. page, and then I see the name of the team. Obviously, Pupfish, great name
yeah,
for a
great
team.
Name.
So we went into the most obscure version of Dueling Gambos of all time. So he's do a bunch of names, and we get this tweet from our listener, Craig, who said, I played on that team, so we did another version of it. He's got. I want to interview Craig. Like,
yeah.
I want
now,
stories.
Now,
can I say, we are number one in listenership with players who played in the Pecos League.
Yeah.
Because we got another email from a guy. I just sent it to you, Vinny.
No way!
Yes, another guy who played in the Pecos League told us his story about
now
it.
Now, let's update what Craig texted you, Vinny, or tweeted us.
He tweeted us.
Yeah.
Stories about the league. Outfielder J.J. Constantino took over as a manager mid-season after the manager quit over his bounced $50 checks.
So his bounced $50 game check made the manager quit the team and a player took over.
We rented vans and drove ourselves to away games. Mercedes didn't partake in defense. He just hit for the babes and the $50 a week.
Story
and $50 a week is news to me, Bickley, consider they bounced every week. And we reused broken bats because a player could use wood glue to repair. can't make this league up.
Is that unbelievable?
Now, we got more stories. I got a book idea. Tales from the Pecos League.
Wow.
It's not a good idea. From Mike. He emailed you to us, Jarrett?
He emailed us, yeah.
All right. I played for that league when it first started up on the Riadoso Osos. That was their name.
That's great.
It switched from the Continental League. It was a joke. There were player coaches. They ran off our skipper because he was too hard on the other teams and umpires. He said, as the heart, these people don't understand baseball. Our owner was told he couldn't run the team anymore due to him being hired from a previous job. We were lucky if we got our $45 a week paychecks, and those stopped three quarters of the way through the season. Baseball was competitive for the most part, but there were players on teams that were paying to be on the team like it was a high school travel ball team. The first year in the Continental League playing in El Paso, they said they were going to pay us. Never did. Didn't provide us host families, like they said, so we have 12 guys staying in a two-bedroom home. We end up getting evicted from it, not because we destroyed it, because the other owner didn't realize that we were going to have so many people in it, sleeping on the floors and air mattresses, no TV. It was just guys who eat, slept, and played baseball.
That's unbelievable.
Looking for that chance to move on to the next level. Riadoso was a much better living situation. The town brought us in and treated us like we were family. Great memories, but I don't wish it upon my worst enemy.
That's
that is great
awesome.
Stuff, Mike.
Check this out. So the league, as a motto, it's life's a pitch.
Yeah.
That's their motto. I like it.
Is the P in parentheses?
Right.
A pitch?
In 2020, the league operated four teams. The Tucson Saguaros won both the regular season and the postseason title.
Yeah, it's Tucson's highest professional team. They play at Amphitheater High School.
Wow.
You want to hear some of the other names in this team?
Yeah.
The Wasco Reserve. The Trinidad Triggers from Trinidad, Colorado. The Santa Fe Fuego. There's some pretty cool uniforms in this league. The Santa Cruz Seaweed. San Rafael Pacifics. Salinas Stockade. Roswell Invaders. Cool names, too.
Oh, yeah.
The Monterey Amberjacks. Sounds like a cereal. Oh, man.
This is a book, man.
We have stumbled upon some great stuff.
Yeah,
thanks to thanks to Mike and Craig for giving us some details
on
this.
Great.
Fantastic.
That's great.
Coming up next, we played a little bit of a Bill Simmons podcast about the Suns as contenders, but Bill, as he's known to do, took a little tangent on Suns history that got us thinking. We'll share it with you next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Dan Bickley, Vince Murata.
Bickley and Murata.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Friday edition of Bickley and Murata here on 98.7 FM, Arizona sports station. You can follow us on Twitter at Bickley underscore Murata. Social studies coming up in just a little bit.
I'm really getting a kick out of Jay Feely blowing off Carlin. I'm really getting a kick out of that.
Okay. Next time he texts you during the show, just ignore him.
He said he had an amazing story, just like that USC dude that we were talking about.
Uh-huh.
Could you come on at 12:30? Sure. Laughing all the way at home watching the Masters now, bro.
All right, I'm sorry, Vinny.
It's one of the looser Friday shows we've had in a while.
Yeah,
I like it. I like it. It's not shenanigans. It's not shenanigans Wednesday, but it's
shenanigans
close.
Week, man.
Yeah. Bill Simmons, we played some of those podcasts, mm-hmm. and he raised some questions. Hey, Suns, I believe they're a legit contender. He had them 2A along with the Nuggets as 2B as legit contenders in the West. He did ask the question, hey, I'm concerned that they don't have a backup five that they can count on right now, and Dario Saric is in another one of those ruts that he's been in. But on that same podcast, the Bill Simmons podcast, this could be painful, fully aware. That's your disclaimer. Not heard all of this, but I like the subject matter. Because Bill Simmons suggests that the Phoenix Suns have had more what-ifs than any team in NBA history.
Talking about what-ifs. What if we didn't get Kareem? What if we won the triple overtime game in Boston, which they easily could have, and then game six was in Phoenix? What if KJ doesn't get hurt in that 1990 game? What if we don't have the cocaine scandal in 1984 where Walter Davis is headed to the Hall of Fame, and they get this whole thing, and all of a sudden it's complete chaos, and they have to rebuild the team, and they get lucky with the KJ trade. But that cocaine scandal is a what if. What if KJ shows up in the 93 finals? What if the Mario Ellie shot doesn't go in? What if Robert Sarver comes in 2005 and 6, if he actually spent money beyond what he did that first year with Steve Nash, Quentin Richardson, they splurged, then all of a sudden they were selling picks, and then they never were able to get over the hump. And there's, you know, they basically gave away Luol Deng. They basically gave away a pick that became Rajon Rondo, et cetera, et cetera. What if the Horry shove never happened? One of the great what ifs of the last 20 years. If that just doesn't happen, do they beat the Spurs? Whoever was winning that series is going to win the title. What if the Artest rebound on the Kobe airball in game 4 2010? Artest made one of the great plays of the last 12, one of the great thinking on your feet plays of the last 12 years in the last two rounds. And he's a lunatic. What if they take Luka Doncic in 2018?
Hey,
something we've mentioned on this podcast more than once.
Hey,
those are 10 awesome what ifs. Like 10 really, like, you fall asleep at night going, wow, what if that didn't happen?
That's quite a list.
Might have left out the biggest one ever, kind of related to the drug scandal. There was a lot of bubbling rumor that this team was headed to San Diego. And Jerry Colangelo came in and formed the ownership group and took it over.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a good what if.
What if that? Yeah, I mean, but what if that hadn't happened? What would Phoenix look like as a sports town right now?
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, see what you're saying.
What if,
I see what you're saying. Yeah, that is
very what if the powers that be of the NBA would have listened to critics and said, what the hell are you putting a team in Phoenix in 1968? There's nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
right.
There's a ton of them. You can come up with those lists for teams, but there is an impressive, mostly painful list.
And that's why I talk about, and that's why that blast earlier today dealt with the element of luck, which I have come to realize is going to be very important to the Phoenix Suns and to the health of this valley, because you would like to believe at some time your luck turns for the better, that there's a reason for all the suffering. That's the code of the long-suffering sports fan. And a little bit of luck is what you need. And what Bill Simmons just said is proof. If you had to rank those, try ranking those 1 through 10 in terms of what was the worst. I mean, can you imagine that? Forming as a basketball franchise in 68 and going to a coin toss that you're not even there in person to witness and you lose it. And
it wasn't like it was video streamed either.
No. And the difference is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar versus Neil Walk. Neil Walk was a fine player and a great man.
Yeah.
But the difference between talent? I mean, how do you even top that? Well, the Robert Horry shove, to me, will always be, that is still painful to, I still get physically mad.
Well, there's like 5 what ifs wrapped up in that one simple instance.
Yeah.
What if it doesn't happen? What if
David Stern isn't such a jerk face?
What if Boris Diaw and Amari Stoudemire stay on the bench or are restrained properly by bench personnel, which it wasn't really as big a thing then.
To listen to the palaver.
What if David Stern didn't rule by the letter of the law? I mean, those are all.
Now, check this out. This is what blows my mind. Ron Artest, the lunatic, okay, is the guy most responsible for the malice at the palace, correct? That incident is why David Stern reacted the way he did after the Robert Horry shove. Okay? That's why players could never leave the bench, because of Ron Artest.
So
and then Ron Artest circles back later.
Twice! World peace, my focus.
Mad at this.
That was almost as good as your Madison Bumgarner line from yesterday, Jared.
The one, Vinny, that sort of predates my Suns fandom and Dan being in the Valley was the 89-90 team with Kevin Johnson and Tom Chambers. Was that really a good team?
Very good team. They beat the heck out of the Lakers in the playoffs in 5 games. Got to the Western Conference Finals and lost to Portland. And then Portland went on to lose to Detroit. I was convinced that was the Suns' year.
They
absolutely dominated the Lakers. Here's what I'm going to say, though.
All right.
Part of the Phoenix sports fan experience is basically that list of what ifs for the Suns. It's long, it's painful. We all get it. If you were going to, I would love to, this would be a great book too.
Mm-hmm.
The top 10 what ifs in the history of every NBA franchise. Because there's been pain, maybe not as much pain or consistent pain without, you know, triumph as the Suns have had. But if you were going to like hold up the top 10s, how many times did the Suns administer the pain of a what if? You know what I'm saying? We don't, as sports fans, especially here in Phoenix, where we focus in on the shared collective, oh man, woe is us kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We don't pay much attention to the other side of things when things went really well for the Suns. And maybe you tripped up a team that thought they had championship aspirations, or a team that, you know, did lose a key player. And they're asking the opposite what if in that city. It's very existential.
Well, no, and I like that. I like that realm. But have there been incidents where we have done that to other cities? Because I've none really jumped to my mind.
It's hard to say because it's not like the Suns took a championship from another team because they've never won a championship.
Maybe on their way, prevented one.
Didn't Barkley have a buzzer beater the year that they, in like the semis or championship?
'93 against the Spurs.
Yep.
Pushed them into the Western Conference Finals.
Maybe the big what if is what if the...
You don't think in Seattle Supersonics fans are saying what if they would have swallowed their whistles in Game 7?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're right. And like maybe the Yankees. What if the Yankees would have won the World Series right after 9/11? What might that have done or meant or whatever? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that's big also because what would that have meant since they sort of went all in financially on that team? Mm-hmm. If it didn't result in a championship and they were still, you know, dealing with all those salaries, and they didn't even get the championship, the Diamondbacks. And one if you didn't mention Bill Simmons there for the Suns, was the what if the Stephen Curry trade goes through on draft night.
There's another one.
That everyone thought was this close to happening.
There's another one. I mean, we can just assume that Steph Curry would have turned into the same player here and would still be here enjoying all that success. There's no guarantee of that.
Oh, this is a great one. This is from my buddy Russell. What if Dallas re-signed Steve Nash?
Yeah.
That's a good one.
What if Mark Cuban said, you know what, he is still worth it. There really is gas left in the tank.
Yeah, right. That's a really good one. Because Steve Nash wasn't only still great. Mark Cuban doing that to him lit a fire that lifted him to that MVP level.
And the other sub ones that we've talked about on the show, the sub one, he mentioned sort of it, but he didn't mention the specific things. What if they re-sign Joe Johnson? What if they re-sign Amari Stoudemire? What if they don't trade Sean Marion for Shaq?
Those are all on the list,
too.
That's
good.
You could probably come up with a list of 50.
I guess when you never, ever win the big one, it's all what ifs.
Yeah, that's because it's all what could have gone differently than you might have won. It's sad.
It is.
But it's something we share.
It is.
It's ours.
And that's why, like Bill Simmons said, if the Suns could actually do this, if they could actually get to another NBA Finals, they're going to be the media darlings because nobody has a story to tell like the Phoenix Suns.
Mm-hmm. Coming up next, Social Studies with Sarah Cazell. It's Bickley and Murata live from the Ak Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.